You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Alrighty, welcome in to a live edition of the Patriots Beat podcast, a morning edition of Patriots Beat here on the CLNS Media Network. I'm Mike Cadlick alongside 98.5 The Sports Hub's Alex Barth. We just spoke to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick this morning following the Patriots 33-26 loss to the Vikings on Thanksgiving night. Bill not still giving us much. Won't dive into the Hunter Henry saga on the goal line. Again, it's morning, Bill, so you never know what you're going to get. But let's dive right into it. We're going to break this thing down, offense, defense, and special teams. Let's start with the offense. And I hate moral victories just as much as the next guy, Alex. But I want to start with the good here because the Patriots offense actually looked like an NFL offense last night, which was really encouraging to see. They scored 26 points. Offensive line, despite missing David Andrews and Isaiah Wynn, looked relatively cleaned up. They were able to give Mac a clean pocket for a majority of the game. He was only sacked three times, which you never want to be sacked three times, but it's certainly an improvement from what we've seen over the last couple weeks. And it allowed Mac Jones to realistically cook. Mac was really good last night. He completed 28 of 39 attempts, threw two touchdowns, did not turn the ball over. That's now three games in a row without an interception for Mac Jones, which is the longest streak in his career. So, it kind of showed, I thought, that if they can keep him upright and call a decent offense around him, that, you know, Mac's the guy here. And I know we loved Bailey Zappe and all earlier this season, but I think Mac showed a lot last night, and I was pleased with the offense overall.
Yeah, no, that was kind of what me and you and a lot of other people have been talking about all year when people come in and they call us Mac homers and this and that. And no, when you give him time to throw, he can throw.
Right.
That's what we've been trying to tell you, and he did it last night. He had some great throws last night, some great individual throws. In terms of the moral victory of it all, I just – look, that's a great game. When you have a young quarterback to come out in that spot in prime time against a not bad defense and throw the ball the way he did, kind of go punch for punch with a veteran guy like Cousins, at least up until the end there, that's encouraging because you look at a performance like that, you say – you know, Mac, hey, he's an NFL quarterback. You kind of are looking for those performances in year one, maybe early in year two. It sucks we're at the point where we have to reaffirm that he's an NFL quarterback, even though he probably was this whole time. He just didn't look like it because of what was going on around him.
Right.
But besides that, I mean, a lot of early season type mistakes from the Patriots in that game, which you don't love to see, but if we're looking at it through the lens of Mac Jones, and I know some people were wondering, hey, are they going to need to go back and get another quarterback this offseason? No, because he can do that. He did it regularly last year when they had a good offensive line. When you assume they're going to fix the offensive line this offseason, and he can get back to doing that regularly next year, it'll be great. But he's got to get there. Somebody just said in the chat, and I think it's a great way to put it, is it an encouraging victory, or was it an encouraging game? Yes. I wouldn't call it a moral victory, but if you want to call it encouraging, especially the way the offense has looked the first 3 months of the year, to see them go out and do that. The Vikings defense, the Jets defense is great. Like, the Jets defense is one of the best in the league. Vikings defense isn't that, but they're also not bad. Like, they're a top half defense. So to come out and do that, it's encouraging. I won't go as far as a moral victory. For Mac, maybe. But anybody else, I don't know.
Well, to flip the switch too, like you said, I mean, the Jets, They only scored 3 points against the Jets last week, and to come out on just 5 days and to sort of be able to turn it around like that and throw up 26 like they did, and for Mac to throw the ball through the air for 380 plus yards, I mean,
career high.
Exactly, career high in passing yards. And I kind of want to, I don't want to completely bow down to him, because I have been a Matt Patricia, I've been very critical of Matt Patricia this season. I don't think he's a good offensive coordinator. I don't really know what he's doing in the role. But they called a pretty good game last night overall, I thought.
There was some
holes, obviously, but overall I thought it was solid. Some play action pass at the right time. They ran the ball okay, I'd say. There were some holes, like I said, but they mixed in the deep ball as well, which we talked about earlier in the year when you saw Mac against the Ravens before he had the ankle sprain. When they push the ball downfield, he's accurate and can complete those, you know, 30-yard passes when they mix them in with short throws and, you know, add chunk plays into the mix, and it can happen, and you saw that last night. He also he spread the ball around the field as well to his guys. I mean, they had 5 players with 60-plus receiving yards. Parker had 4 catches for 80. Ramondre, again, through the air, 9 catches, 76 yards. I mean, he's turning into an all-purpose back, and they're going to need that moving forward, which is too bad because Harris left the game with the hamstring injury.
Yeah, was reportedly on crutches after the game.
Exactly, yeah. So that's going to be tough. But Aguilar had 60-plus in the air. Hunter Henry had 63. Jacoby, 62. So, I mean, again, I thought they spread the ball around the field well, and they competed with, like you said, another high-profile offense in the Vikings.
Yeah. Well, let's remember, too, you talk about not having Damian Harris. Mac didn't have his favorite target for most of that game in Jacoby Myers. And I saw some people asking, you know, what his injury is. We don't have an update yet. I honestly would be surprised if we get one before Sunday, which is the Patriots next. The Sunday will be their Wednesday this week, with the game on Thursday. The one thing I would say, he did come back in the game. They didn't play him a lot. I think he was only playing on third downs at the end of the game. But the fact he did finish the game, he was never ruled out, right? He came back in. He played a couple more plays. I think he was on the field for that final drive. I believe he was on the field for that final drive. Yeah,
he caught the last pass.
I would call that encouraging. I don't think he, you know, felt great waking up this morning.
Right.
But dude's a warrior, first and foremost, and we knew that. But I would call that an encouraging sign, just in terms of, you know, will they have to play without him? Could he be limited? Yeah, probably. But if generally you don't finish the game and then miss time down the road, especially with something like a shoulder injury.
Right. I mean, at first it sounded like, at least reading on Twitter from the guys that were there, it looked like maybe concussion protocol, and then it was ruled the shoulder. So you think, okay, did he break his collarbone? Is this a dislocation type deal? But I mean, like you said, exactly. But to come back in the game and be able to finish it, that's certainly encouraging.
More thing on the play calling though. Going back to the first series, I actually watched the game with my family. It's the first time I've been able to do that this year. And they were sick of me right away, because the first series I kept yelling out what the plays were, because there are things that me and you have been talking about, them bringing back, things I've been writing about on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Second play, they go RPO. They pick up 7 yards. Then they run motion. They motion Tyquan Thornton left to right, and then they ran it back to the left, and then they ran a play action to the tight end. And then when they went slot seam to the speed receiver, and that was the touchdown, I have been calling for slot seam. That was Max bread and butter at Alabama. I've been calling for that slot seam, the speed slot look, like 4 co-hosts ago on this show. I was saying that they should run that. Yeah. So, you know, there were certainly more of those concepts. And we kind of talked about it last week at the Jets, where there's that brief window where they hit the back-to-back big plays, where they went the bootleg action right to Hunter Henry on the weak side. And then I forget what the follow-up play was, but it was something else like that. And then all of a sudden they got in the red zone and boom, here we go with the shotgun runs, and they got shut down, right?
Right.
There was still, you know, there were certainly more of the things we've wanted to see. Certainly a lot more. But there still were a couple times where they got, you know, like between the 25 and the 15-yard line, and they're just, you know, shotgun sweep handoff, and it's not there. It hasn't been there all year. So encouraging. Like, again, this gets to the point where it's encouraging, but – still haven't seen a full game of it. So it seems like they're trending in the right direction. some of the stuff they called was, again, things that we've been waiting to see. And look at that. They called it, and it worked. And the offense started moving the football. And Mac Jones looked like the NFL quarterback he is. It's just, it's not, for whatever reason, I don't know why, for whatever reason, it's not totally there yet, and it's a little frustrating.
So. No, it's not. I mean, like you said, they put it together on the first drive, and then
– Well, they scored on four of their first seven drives. Like, it wasn't I'm using the first drive as an example, but there were a couple of drives where, like, they're going – there's another one. They went play action in the tight end on third down, like, on third and three. That's a play 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. They just run shotgun sweep, and they get tackled, and they punt it. So
– exactly.
You see the growth there.
But then on the flip side, there's also the Jonathan Jones interception. The one time where I was like, oh, here's primetime Kirk Cousins for us in action. John Jones flips it for them, and then they go four plays, 1 yard, and kick.
Right, exactly.
So those are the
drives. Well, I will say, the first play after the pick, they tried to take a shot.
Right.
And it didn't work, but, like, I didn't mind that play call. I'll give you another one, and I know a lot of people are pissed about this play. The double reverse. I've been saying, get creative, run the ball with the wide receivers, get Kendrick Bourne in space.
Put it in KB's hands, yeah.
Right. The execution didn't work. And look, maybe you don't run it with the backup center, but I like that they're in that headspace because it's different, it's creative, it forces the defense to kind of second-guess their initial read. Those are the kind of plays they need to run. They're not going to work every time. Like, we can fully acknowledge that, but,
right,
you know, set something up off of it, a screen, a wide receiver pass, something like that, but... like, even that play, which I know a lot of people are upset about today, I didn't hate that because it was them doing something that they very much needed to do for weeks now, and they did it. And I hope they don't entirely abandon it just because it didn't work that one time. Especially, you know, if they get David Andrews back, that play blew up the middle. If you get a good block up the middle there, Kendrick Bourne had room to run on the outside. Yeah. So, you know, wasn't necessarily the worst idea in the world there.
BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting for football and basketball this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. Always your continued source for sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. We're the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf games and events. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards. Bet online, where the game starts.
Do it with Tyquan Thornton. That'd be fun.
Well, I mean, yeah, again, they need to use Tyquan more.
I'm fine with getting KB the ball in space as well, but, like, I mean, Tyquan Thornton, continue to use him more because if they can get him going with Mac Jones playing this way, that's going to be solid. Just a note on the offense, I guess we could talk about the elephant in the room. I hate complaining about officiating. I think that you got to let these guys play and just deal with it because the entire league deals with it. But last night was atrocious. I mean,
I think that the only thing I hate more than complaining about the officiating is Alex Kemp.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So
my rule of thumb personally, I hate being the guy that blames the ref. I hate it when other people blame the ref.
Right.
Like, we've talked about this before on the show. I don't believe any football game was ever won or lost on a single play. And I think all bad officiating evens out, whether it's within the game, whether it's game to game. Maybe it takes a couple seasons. I'm sure some Steelers fans feel a little vindicated about Jesse James this morning, even though that was the incorrect call because the rule has since changed. But the point is, I generally, my rule of thumb for myself is I have one game a year, a calendar year, that I'm allowed to blame the refs. I already used mine this year on game three of the – no, it's one game like total, like of all the games.
Oh, okay.
Right. I used mine on game three of the Eastern Conference semifinals, Celtics-Bucks. Do you remember when Marcus Smart was very clearly shooting the ball and got fouled so egregiously that he couldn't get the shot off? So they said it wasn't a shooting foul and the Celtics lost. That was my game this year. That was a horribly officiated game. It was.
Yeah,
I am kind of regretting I used it so early. I usually save my game for football season. I remember saying at the time, oh, there's no way. It's not going to be worse than this.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick to my rule because I'm a man of honor. I'm a man of my word. Yes, but
he's a man of honor.
I am regretting burning my Blame the Officials game back on May 7th because I could really use it this morning.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, specifically the Hunter Henry touchdown that was called back. I mean, the flip-flopping on the rules and surviving the ground. And
it's not – surviving the ground is not a rule anymore. They changed that in 2018. The fact that – I kind of The fact that Walt Anderson used that phrase in his explanation is a major, major problem. If he didn't turn to that phrase, it's all just kind of jargon and it's referee talk as we know it. They called it off a dated rule. Look, it's one thing if you want to say, because his hand's under the ball. The ball moves, but the ball can touch the ground as long as the ground doesn't impact it. And his hand's under the ball when the ball moves. I thought that, and then he rolls over and he kind of reshuffles it up against his body. If they called that a catch, but not a touchdown, if they were like, oh, he caught it, but he's down at the half yard line because he reshuffled the ball after crossing the plane.
Sure.
I'd get that. I don't love it, but I understand the rule there's being interpreted in that way.
Yeah.
And then the Patriots probably go for it, right? And they can still come away with 7 points. That's what I thought they were reviewing that for the first like 5 minutes. An incompletion didn't even cross my mind. It's a dated rule that still probably wasn't called correctly. So yeah, I was the two plays that were really bad. There were others. I know they missed the hold on the Kyle Duggar on the kick return touchdown. The other really bad one was that third down on the fourth quarter on what was really the Patriots' last real drive of the game, right? Where Hunter Henry gets tackled out in the pattern. Matt gets his face mask rad. It's just nothing. This crew has thrown more flags this year to this point than any crew in the league. And none of that gets called. Come on. That's just bad. Big play. There's letting them play, but that was too much.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, it's tough. And again, it's like you hate to blame the refs and you hate to have them have such an impact. Because like you say, it's not just one play. The Hunter Henry touchdown, Belichick told us it this morning. It was a 4-point swing, right? But like, there's plenty more plays throughout the game that can swing it in the opposite direction. But when it's so, you know, when it's every third, fourth play of the game, it's like, oh, that could have been called. That shouldn't have been called. That's not football anymore. That's just the Stripes getting way too involved. They're not involved enough. So, I mean, it's tough to see. Again, the face mask on Mac was brutal. Like,
right.
A game-changing play that you just don't see. When there's a ref behind the pocket every time. Like, that's kind of why he's
right
there.
The ref's right there.
That's why he's there, is to watch, A, the offensive line and see, you know, holding calls, et cetera. But also, their main thing is protecting the quarterback in the NFL. And when his face mask is getting pulled all the way across, it's like, that's why that ref's behind the pocket.
One more thing on the Hunter Henry, because I forgot to say this.
Yeah.
Did the ball move? Maybe. But can you say conclusively that it moved? Because I don't think you can. And that's what, to overturn a call, right? Indisputable video evidence.
Right.
And maybe it moved. I don't think it did. Maybe it did. I can understand why people might think it did. There's no way in hell you can conclusively tell from those replays that it moved.
Well, and with the hand underneath the football, it's like, okay, if the ball touches the ground, but it's within possession with his hand and he's holding the football, it doesn't matter that it hit the ground. So, like,
right.
If it hit the ground and
that's what changed in the rule from after the Jesse James.
That's
what you just laid out is exactly what changed in the rule. If we were playing in 2017 and trust me, there are parts of me that really wishes it was still 2017.
Yeah.
Then it's not a catch. But it's 2017 and the Patriots have Tom Brady and they win that game 50-10. But it's 2022. That's not the rule anymore.
It's bizarre how many tight-knit, like, goal line calls there are with reaching to the pile and hands underneath. Because it just happened. It is gross and it's too bad, but it happens. And it just happened a few weeks ago with Travis Kelce. and it was called same play. It's like it's terrible. It's tough. And again, this you wish, like you said, you didn't burn the Marcus Smart game because this is the game to really get into the.
Yeah, that's why now I know for 2023, I'm going to save it till football season.
But that's our ref rant. But I mean, overall, I think some good things to take out of the offense, which we hadn't seen in a few weeks. Anything else on the offense before we kind of move along here?
Well, it looks like Damian Harris. I mean, we kind of talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
Damian Harris on crushes after the game. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do at the running back spot.
Especially obviously, Pierre Strong making a mental mistake.
Right. Can't imagine Pierre when we'll get to that. Can't imagine Pierre Strong dresses again this year. J.J. Taylor's back on the practice squad. Like, maybe it's more Kevin Harris, but
yeah,
it's an initial report. He was on crutches. We don't know exactly what it means. They could have just been being careful. But if Damian Harris is going to miss time again, it's a lot on Ramondre's plate.
A lot on Ramondre, who was solid in this game.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say Ramondre carried the ball 7 times with 36 yards, but his effect in the passing game is really exciting to see because they haven't really had that that receiving back here in a couple of years since James White sort of went down with the hip and everything. So it's good to see him get involved in the backfield. But again, you don't want him to have all these touches. You want to be able to split the time with a guy like Harris. So that's going to be tough.
The other thing, I mean, we should give the offensive line credit. We've bashed them enough this year.
Mm-hmm.
They played a good game down essentially 3 starters. To come in and do that, you know, you're on your third string right tackle, you're on your backup center. I got to go through and watch it closer, and they weren't perfect by any means, but we kind of talked about this before. Mac had time to throw the ball down the field when they wanted him to, and they did it less, and they ran some quicker concepts that I think helped offset what the pass rush was doing. But, you know, if the offensive line plays that like that the rest of the way, I still think they need it. It's still the number one spot they need to improve in the offseason. But if the offensive line plays like that the rest of the way, they're going to have a chance. Now, Buffalo next week might be without Von Miller. He got hurt yesterday. We don't have an update on him yet, but that could be a break. So whatever it was, you know, you go in, all right, they're down Isaiah. When they're down David Andrews again, you know, what's it going to look like? It looks pretty good. Maybe this is the combination. I still would put David Andrews back when he comes back, but maybe it's Yadni Kajust at right tackle and Trent Brown at left, and there you go. You just, you know, get going. So
Trent had one tough play though up front.
And it was a big play. But
yeah, it was one of the 3 sacks where I think they ran a 5-step concept and he tried to cut.
He tried to cut block, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a disaster. And it ends up getting Max sacked. And that's one of those plays where it's one of the many plays that swing a game. It's not just one, but
I almost can sit here, and this is going to get me called a homer. The offensive line only made one bad play. That's huge. That's massive. That's major progress.
Right.
And yeah, Trent Brown needs to be better than that. Absolutely. But Mac was sacked 14 times. 16 times. 16 times over the last 3 games. So I'll take one bad play and they refine the rest of it. It's progress. It's what I said before. I won't call it a moral victory, but I'll call it progress. It sucks we're talking about progress in late November, but it's progress.
Yeah, I agree. But before we get into the defense and special teams, that was the good, but now we got to sort of get into the bad, unfortunately. But before we do so, let's talk about our friends at LinkedIn, Alex, because these days, every new potential
Send player, Alex Kemp to LinkedIn.
Alex Kemp needs LinkedIn. The Patriots, or the NFL rather, needs to use LinkedIn.com/beat to try and hire new officials because last night was brutal. And these days, every new potential hire feels like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. And that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. We use LinkedIn Jobs here at CLNS Media, and we can't recommend it enough. It's super easy to post your job. Then add the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. As we inch closer to December here, we're 5 days away? So it's the perfect time to add the right team member and end 2022 strong. And it's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number 1 in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/beat. That's linkedin.com/beat to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply as always. So yeah, offense was great again, but we now got to get into the bad now. I like to start with the good and get into the bad. It's kind of funny. The Patriots defense was what kind of kept them in games over the last several weeks. And then as soon as the offense gets it together, the defense doesn't play well. They allowed primetime Kirk Cousins to sort of shred them to the tune of just about 300 yards and three touchdowns. They only sacked him once. They weren't able to get pressure on Cousins really at all, even with them missing Christian Darrisaw up front, which that was one of something we touched on here on Thursday or Tuesday, rather, was that whatever day it was, Monday.
But days of the week aren't real anymore.
Especially during the holidays.
It's Monday. But, it's Monday.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the things we touched on, one of the matchups was, you know, a backup tackle who we barely even heard of versus guys like Matthew Judon and Josh Uche, and they got nothing on Cousins. They sacked him once for 9 yards. They allowed Justin Jefferson to go rogue too, something that, you know, we talk about and you hear it all the time around here, is that the Patriots and Bill Belichick's defense, you're going to take away their best player and let everybody else beat you. They let Justin Jefferson beat them on Thursday. So not the best performance from the defense overall.
Yeah, the defensive play calling, I mean, that felt like throwback to Matt Patricia. Some of that soft zone. They dropped Matt.
Why does this guy call plays around here? You just got to get the play sheet out of this guy's hands.
They dropped Matthew Judon into coverage quite a bit, especially early on, which was like flashbacks to Matt Patricia. Trey Flowers used to do that a lot. The one play that got pressure on Cousins was the interception, right? Daniel Aquali's right there at his feet. He can't step into it. Throws off the back foot, sails it. Jonathan Jones is right there. On Cousins, I mean, I'll tip my cap to Kirk Cousins. I will. He played a great game. Primetime Kirk Cousins played like a primetime player. He did. And I talked about coming into the week, getting pressure on him. What a big deal that was going to be. The massive difference in his numbers between throwing from a clean pocket and throwing under pressure. And they pressured him a couple times, and he threw the ball well under pressure. And that's because they didn't – you have to keep that up. It has to be regular. And they only had one sack in the game. It came on the first or second play of the fourth quarter. So they didn't hit. They only had three quarterback hits total. They didn't hit him. They didn't upset him. Basically, they let him get in a rhythm. And you saw what happened. I mean, he looked like a guy who was locked in. It was kind of the same thing that happened with Mac Jones. The difference is Kirk Cousins had Justin Jefferson. And on one hand, what'd you say? They let Justin Jefferson, I forget how you phrased
beat
it.
Them. Let them beat him. Let him beat them.
Well, it's something like kind of like let him run open or whatever. And they did at times. Yeah. The soft zone.
They let him go rogue. They let him go rogue.
They let him go rogue. That's what you said. The soft zone was certainly frustrating at times. It wasn't great. But there's also plays where he's double covered, taking massive shots from safeties and still catching the ball. I know they were saying last night, you know, after the game, we had Chase, and now we got other guys like this coming up in Diggs and Adams and Hill. And I think Justin Jefferson's the best receiver in the league right now. Yeah, I mean, some of what he was doing was just because it's not like he made one great catch and you're like, oh, wow, what a catch. You know, it was every single time they threw him the ball. Was he 9 for 9 on targets? I know he finished with 9 catches.
Yeah, he had
The box score up 11, in front of
11
me.
Targets.
Okay, but I mean, it's like
that's a good percentage.
Kirk's throwing the ball in these tight windows and he's getting hit. He's still holding on to it. I mean, it was just unreal. So,
yeah.
On one hand, I'm surprised they didn't smother him more. I'm surprised they went with that soft zone as much as they did. On the other hand, even when they did smother him, he caught the ball. And it was for big gains and big plays. So, to me, the issue was up front. The issue was with the pass rush. They just, with the backup left tackle against an offensive line that hasn't been great. Yeah. You know, Matthew Judon didn't do a ton in this game. Josh Uche had the one sack, didn't do a ton besides that. I think they missed Christian Barmore. This was the first time it really felt like they missed Christian Barmore a ton. They faced a veteran quarterback. They let him get comfortable, and that's what happens when you do that. So, again, I'll tip my hat to Kirk Cousins in prime time. Kind of crazy to say that, but they didn't get the pressure on him, and he made them pay. To me, it's as simple as that defensively for the Patriots in this one.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and again, you mentioned missing Barmore, and you mentioned, you know, no lack of pass rush and, you know, being up front, right? I mean, the run defense was actually solid. I think they only allowed, like
– the run defense is good,
2.1 yards a rush. They held Dalvin Cook in check. I mean, he had 22 attempts for 42 yards. He averaged less than 2 yards a pop. So, like, the run defense is good, but that doesn't really matter when you're getting shredded through the air and you still have
to run the ball.
Exactly. So, not only did Jefferson go off, but, I mean, even when they did cover Jefferson, Adam Thielen had a day, too. He had 9 catches for 60 yards and a touchdown.
Well, they also had trouble with Hawkinson,
I was just going to say, Hawkinson – Duggar struggled in coverage yesterday. He slipped on the one in the end zone, which I still don't think that's an excuse. Don't slip. I mean, you got to cover the guy, right? Like,
yeah, they slipped a couple times yesterday. Miles Bryant slipped on yeah. Was that Jefferson too? That was Rager.
Yeah.
On the Jalen one where Miles Bryant slipped. Yeah.
So, Hawkinson had 5 for 43 in the touchdown on third down. Looked like they covered it up pretty well. It took Kirk a second to get through his progressions, but then he finds Hawkinson for the touchdown. Kyle Duggar slips.
Right.
We've talked about they've had relative success covering tight ends with Duggar in the mix, but he, after giving him his flowers last week, Duggar struggled. I've been a huge advocate of the defense this season, but they beat up on the bad teams, the Jets and the Lions. The Colts, and then when they end up facing a good offense in the Ravens and the Vikings and, I mean, the Bears with Justin Fields, they basically started the Justin Fields coming out party on Monday night a few weeks ago.
Right. Well, that worries me. The Bears had a long week going into that game. They played on Thursday night the week before, and they entirely revamped their offense in that, mini bye. So the Vikings with that offense have been a wagon.
Offense, right, and the Bears have been
away. The Bears.
Yeah, and so that worries me a bit. You have the Bills coming up, you have the Bengals coming up, you have the Dolphins coming up. Three of the better offenses in the NFL. I think they have the players to get it done, but it's almost like you said that the play calling was funky. They need to scheme it up better, and they need to play better against better opponents.
Yeah, and it felt like this was such a good tune-up for the Bills too, right? Because you've got that star receiver, a good tight end,
right,
a quarterback that can make plays but is erratic at times. And yeah, Bills fans kill me. I compare Kirk Cousins to Josh Allen. but you know what I mean? Like, it's a similar sort of – the Bills run it at a much higher level, but it's a similar sort of offense. And they didn't play it right. They didn't – again, the soft zone, the rushing three, I don't know what – They're down
against an offensive line. Right, exactly.
Right, against a banged up offensive line. And I don't have the exact percentage yet. I'll get that later today, and I'll probably tweet it out. But the exact – and Twitter's right there. Rushing three that regularly against that offensive line and against that offense, like, I don't necessarily know what they saw with that. And if you rush three against the Bills, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah,
you don't want to overly blitz the Bills, but – Put Matthew Judon after Josh Allen at least. So I just a little bit of a head scrape. I feel like we're talking after this one. You know, it's the same conversation we've had after pretty much every game this year. The difference is we're talking about the offense like we usually talk about the defense.
Right.
We're talking about the defense like we usually talk about the offense. The roles are just reversed. It's the same game. It was just, you know, to use one of Bill's favorite phrases, it's a lack of complimentary football.
Right.
The offense did its part. The defense and special teams did not. It's been the opposite for the most part this year. The defense has done its part. The offense has not. Special teams has been 50-50.
Yeah. I mean, we can get into the special teams and basically, I mean, we could do it now. I think we hit on the defense really. I mean, again, you want these three phases to complement each other. And it felt like you mentioned, the defense had it all season and we're waiting on the offense to turn the corner. We talk about it every single week. It's like, watch the tape, throw out the good, or throw out the bad, use the good, and put it all together. And then Kirk goes down and, you know, they dice him up. First drive, Justin Jefferson touchdown. Thanksgiving, what have you. And then Mac comes down and answers. And it's like, okay, they have the offense figured out now. Let's get the defense back on track. Justin Jones interception, some good defense last night. And then they go four plays for a yard. And it's like, they need to complement each other better. And the special teams, we can do that right now as well. The special teams was a disaster, I thought, last night. Starting with the 97-yard Vikings kick return touchdown. And then Pierre Strong runs into the punter. Vikings score a touchdown on that same drive when they just stopped them. Michael Pilardi tried to flip the field once, and it was a 27-yard punt. Marcus Jones fields a punt inside the 5-yard line when he could have just let it roll into the end zone for a touchback. They get nothing off that drive. Marcus Jones specifically was good as a return man in this game, but that's one bonehead play from a rookie, that one of the many plays that can change the course of a game. So
that's the one. Special teams
needs to be better.
And we can dig into the rest of that. I don't disagree that special teams needs to be better. Yeah. It was really interesting from Bill, though, and I just want to pull up – I have the transcript right here. Bill was asked about that play, you know, yeah. if he wants to see Marcus Jones let that ball go into the end zone.
Uh-huh.
And I, why can't I find it on the transcript here?
Was it last night?
Here it is. No, it was this morning. Bill was asked if he wants to see Marcus Jones let the ball go in the end zone there. This was Bill. It was a tough one. In retrospect, I don't know. We end up getting it out to, I don't know, the 15-yard line. Something like that, just a couple of yards. I think take a shot at making a big play in that situation. I'm all right with that. If we had done a better job of our blocking, did a better job to get him started, he might have had a chance there. So that situation, you don't have a lot of options right there. I'd say punt return in that situation is not a bad option. I think I'll give Mark Jones benefit of the doubt. Based on that answer, it sounds like the coach has told him to return the ball.
Yeah.
And with no timeouts.
And they trust him to make a read on that and try and return the ball.
Right.
Yeah.
With no timeouts, maybe they figured, hey, we only need a field goal. Like if this kid breaks one, we're maybe a play or two away from field goal range, maybe he houses it. So
yeah.
I don't love the coaching decision to tell him to field it, but maybe that's not on Marcus Jones. Maybe that's
right. Bill took that one.
Belichick. It's just adding context to the play. It doesn't excuse it. It's just adding context to the play. The rest of it.
Yeah.
The rest of it. Yuck. Just bad. Just gross. Just no. It wasn't good. Yeah. The kick return, Kyle Duggar get held? Yes. Are there 10 other guys out there who can make the play? Yes. There were a couple guys who came down initially. I think it was Slater and Schooler, which is shocking. Yeah, did not take good angles to the ball. They didn't. I also don't know why the Patriots kicking to that guy. He's one of the best returners in the league. I don't know if Folk can't get the ball out of the back of the end zone. Maybe that's where they missed Jake Bailey. But if Folk can't, and they've got some good returners coming up on their schedule too, you might need to give Michael Plardy a shot at kickoffs here, because that's a kickoff that should just be going out of the back of the end zone. You shouldn't even be giving them a chance with it. Didn't even get to the end zone. And maybe they were running some plays trying to pin them because those kicks were angled way to the right. I don't know why you're trying to pin him. Just kick the ball out of the end zone. I wouldn't mess with him. Yeah. What were the other plays? The running into the punter. They clearly had something drawn up. Like they did. Remember against the Colts on the blocked punt where there's all that motion before the punt and they got the block. They clearly had something drawn up where they felt like Pierre Strong could have made a play in that situation, but he got too jacked up. And he just ran right into the punter. He let himself get loose. He can't do that.
You need to
play controlled, right? You need to play controlled in that situation, especially when you know it's a 4th and 3. Like if it's 4th and really 6 or longer, called 7 or longer. That's one thing. If you run into the punter, they're still probably punting. And if you need that little bit of a boost to make the play, like that's – you see guys do that sometimes. The 4th and really long, they'll sell out because it's not roughing. The 5 yards, not automatic first down.
Yeah, they're still going to punt it again. Yeah,
right. 4th and 3, no, you need to be more controlled than that. Michael Pilardi did not have a good game in a dome after he kicked well in pretty rough conditions last week. I don't know what the hell happened there. That was, I mean, we'll have to ask him about it. That was just weird. And then there was one other one. What am I missing?
That's what I had.
Okay.
Kick return, strong.
It felt like there was more.
There was more. But I mean, to add something too to the Pierre Strong play, during watching it on television, it was like, oh, here we go. The refereeing, the officiating rather, was so bad last night that it was like, oh, what's this going to be? Because there was a play last week when Raekwon McMillan ran in
and
it was bogus. So I was like, let's see the replay. Let's see what they're jacking up now. But that was bad. It was a penalty and it was a bad play by Pierre Strong
Go ahead.
No, just that. I mean, you have to be smarter than that. You have to assess the situation. Like you said, 4th and 3, get the ball back. Stay away from the punter. You have a beeline for him. Watch it. And once he gets that ball away, drop to the ground. Like, do something other than getting anywhere near that punter's leg. And he did it, and they ended up scoring a touchdown on the drive.
Well, what the coaching point there, what they teach you to do is to take the ball off the punter's toe is the term. And basically, if you angle yourself like to catch it off the toe, and the idea is if you angle yourself in that way, you're not actually angled at the punter. You're angled about 6 inches in front of the punter. And that way, when you dive for the ball like that, your momentum takes you past him, not into him. And Pierre Strong, you watch the way he lines up. You watch the way he angles his dives right at Ryan Wright. So
yeah,
that's again, it's poor execution. It's either not coached right or it's poor execution. The other thing I was going to say is one of my keys coming into this game, the Vikings have not been a good special teams unit this year. They haven't been. Right. So this was a game where special teams was a chance for the Patriots to flip this game. Special teams did ultimately flip and heavily determine this game, but not in their way. That's not generally the kind of game you see the Patriots lose. These are all the mistakes that teams make against the Patriots, right? And it was Patriots making those mistakes last night.
Yeah, it was tough. Again, it's like last week, the defense was awesome. The special teams won the game for them. The offense was bad. Get the offense right, and this team can succeed, man. And then the offense
like gets complimentary football.
Yeah, the offense gets it relatively right last night, and the defense and special teams kind of blow it for them. So this team can compete in the AFC if they pulled it all together. I think they showed that on the offensive side of the football last night anyway. The defense, I guess, this is just sort of my wrap-up, is like the defense, you know, they played well against the Cupcakes, and then once the better offenses come through, they sort of struggle a bit. But that's not something they can't fix. And the special teams, it's usually the Patriots' bread and butter. It's like, you know, Belichick's is, he's a defensive guy, but he's solid on special teams as well, and that kind of collapses. But if they get all three right, I mean, the Vikings are 9-2, and they played them down to the wire. They're a good football team. So the Patriots showed a lot last night, and I think there's, as much as a loss stinks, you're 6-5 now. It gets harder and harder to stay in the playoff race. They do still control their own destiny, oddly enough. But
I mean, that means beating the Bills twice.
Exactly.
That's a lot.
The Dolphins, the Bengals, they have a tough schedule coming up still.
If they went out, I don't know if they're going to be the Super Bowl favorite, but they'll be up there.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Like, I'm not saying they're going to win out, but like,
no, if they were to win out,
right?
Absolutely.
We're talking about some flip got switched and they're so.
They'd be playing outstanding football. They'd have beaten the Bills twice, the Bengals, who have a dominant offense, the Dolphins. I mean, the Raiders stink, but like they would have to get through some quality opponents. So they're not going to win out, but if they do, in theory, they make the playoffs. But tough to drop to 6-5 in that spot when you kind of had it there. It's just one of those games where you're going to kick yourself once you look back on it and say, that's a game we could have had. And whether it's a changing of seeding in the playoffs or making it versus missing it. This game and like the Bears game this season feel like two games that they could have had it. But
and that's what I mean. I tweeted that last time. I called it a brutal loss. And friend of the program, Steve Peoples, kind of asked me on Twitter. He's like, they showed progress. Is it really like brutal? Like, you know, I don't think they played brutally. It's not necessarily brutal. It was a good point by Steve. It's not necessarily brutal in the sense that, you know, oh man, they're a brutal team. They're a bad team. Like, that's not what it was. It was like, you're right. When we go back, it's at the end of the season and they need a game to, you know, whether it's make the playoffs, it's a more favorable matchup, whatever it may be.
Right.
This is going to be the game we go to and say they could have had this one for a team in such a tight playoff race. This was a very winnable game and they dropped it. Honestly, the equivalent last year is the opener against Miami, right, where they're down there. They have the field goal. I forget, was the field goal to tie it or take the lead? Whatever it was, late in that game. They had a field goal and Damien Harris fumbles the ball, right?
Oh, yes. Okay.
You know,
Max first start, sure.
Right, Max first start. And you go to the end of the year, and they had one more win. They would have won the division.
Right.
And you go back to that, and you're like, it's a winnable game. They could have had it. It's brutal. It hurts. This is this probably ends up as that game this year. If they need one more game, for whatever reason it is, seeding, making the playoffs overall, this is going to be the game we point at and say that should have been that game.
Yeah. But stuff to build off too, right? I mean, you got to get right back at it. It's something you think when you play on a Thursday, you have a long week coming up, but you don't because the Bills come to town next Thursday. Throwback week back in the Pat Patriots. Huge game, divisional matchup, AFC matchup. So, I mean, Buffalo won a tight one last night. Josh Allen again does it against the Lions. But a huge divisional matchup, which if they play on offense like they did last night, I think it could be another tight game. We'll see. I haven't looked at any look-ahead lines in the spread and sort of what Vegas thinks. But a game that, you know, that would be a huge win if they can pull it off against Buffalo. Do you want to quickly touch on some college football before we get out of here? Because
I was going to say we probably – so real quick, I wanted to look something up on the Bills game. The one thing I will throw out there, current forecast for Thursday night, raining, winds about 20 miles an hour. So
throwback to last year's yeah. game in Buffalo.
It wasn't raining for that one. That would have been fun.
No,
let's do a quick college football minute and Boston Sports Minute. I think we got to hit both here real quick.
Okay, we have rivalry week coming up in college football, so yeah. let's hit that. Because there's our backer, I want to make it festive here.
Yeah,
rivalry weekend, college football, the game. Let's not bury the lead and let's talk about Michigan Ohio State because two Heisman
first playoff game of the year.
Yeah, it literally is. It's a playoff game. It's Michigan Ohio State, two Heisman front runners ish, two of the three Heisman candidates, I'd say, in CJ Stroud and Blake Corum facing off on offense. I think it's Ohio State's game to lose again. I think that Harbaugh got them last year. It was his first win against Ohio State in his career at Michigan, but I think Ohio State's just too good right now. It's tough when they can score points like that, and Michigan, I mean, J.J. McCarthy's fine, but to have to rely on a run game to win a game against Ohio State, I don't love it. I mean, we'll see where that goes, but that's probably the biggest game of the weekend, like you said, first playoff game, really.
Yeah, and Corum's banged up, and I kind of agree with you. I know Harbaugh beat them last year, but I still just can't pick Harbaugh to beat Ohio State. Look, right. I don't think this Ohio State team is as good as Ohio State teams in the past, right? They play close with Maryland. They play close with Northwestern. I don't totally buy it. If they get Jackson Smith and Jigba back, huge boost, like major boost. But I think Ohio State wins this. I don't think Michigan's there this year. I don't. I think it's a down year for the Big Ten in general. But Ohio State has CJ Stroud. Honestly, I'll throw a third Heisman contender in there. I don't know if he'll win it, but he should be considered. That's Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, kid's stud.
Honestly, he's the turning point for me. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. makes enough plays. Michigan, I love Blake Corum, but he can't create those explosive plays as regularly as Marvin Harrison Jr. does. I think
it's just harder to do as a running back.
Right, exactly. It's the nature of the position. And by the way, Harbaugh's game management last week was horrible.
Yeah, it was.
And he's done that a couple times this
year.
That
one could have got away from them. Yeah.
I think this game comes down to Marvin Harrison Jr. makes a big play or two, and Michigan shoots themselves in the foot at the end of the game. So, you know, typical Ohio State Michigan.
Let's do the Iron Bowl because Alabama's, what, sixth in the country, seventh in the country right now? But
they're out of the playoff. But
people are talking that they can still get themselves into this thing somehow.
Look, I love Alabama. I do. I want them to make it. I want Nick Saban to make the playoff. They're not going to. Because there's Tennessee still ahead of them, like realistically. I don't remember if they're ahead of them in the rankings. I don't think they are. But Tennessee beat them. Tennessee's
ranked
LSU.
10th now. So
where's Alabama?
Seven.
Okay.
Seven.
Tennessee beat them. Tennessee beat LSU, who beat them. I just, you know, LSU and Tennessee, and of course Georgia are all ahead of them. I don't the traditional powerhouse that's going to have the backdoor way in. You know, as much as I say I love Alabama, I want Nick Saban in. The guy I don't want anywhere near it because I can't stand him is Dabo. And he's going to have a chance to backdoor his way in here. And I am a huge South Carolina fan right now. Burn any of the tape. I've never said anything bad about Spencer Rattler. Neither of us, Mike, right?
No, hell no.
Never. Huge South Carolina fan this weekend. But Clemson's going to have a chance to backdoor their way in. I think ultimately, like, and we did this last week, right? We had this nice, tidy little playoff picture, and it was all laid out. And then Statement Saturday, it was great. It was a mess. I think the way it works out right now, Georgia gets by Georgia Tech, right?
That would be good though if Tech can take them off.
Then it all goes to the wind. And I think Georgia's going to beat LSU. I know I said maybe LSU can hang in there. I don't know. I think you're looking at Georgia, the winner of Ohio State, Michigan. They're going to have to put TCU in if they win out. And then if USC wins out, and that's the toughest one because you never know in the Pac-12, but if USC wins out, those are the four teams. The only place it gets tricky is if Michigan beats Ohio State and it's close.
Yeah.
Because the committee will default to Ohio State, right? But if you have a Big Ten undefeated champion Michigan, an Ohio State team that barely lost to them, you set up a rematch in the semifinal of 2-3, and then it comes down to, is it one loss USC? Pac-12 champion, one loss USC, or undefeated TCU. And I really think the committee might go USC there because of the brand name. Because they've been playing better football here down the stretch. So
that USC Notre Dame game this weekend is huge.
Sneaky, I think big. That's gonna Notre Dame shouldn't be ranked as high as they are. They have two brutal losses on their schedule. I also think Clemson's overrated. I don't think that's as big of a win as people are making it, but it's Notre Dame, so they're going to be where they're going to be. Right. But yeah, no, that's a big game.
Yeah, that's put it. That's sort of if USC can win out and Notre Dame or last week UCLA, then Notre Dame, then Pac-12 championship, they're going to get themselves in. But if they lose, that makes it interesting with the Big Tens and TCU, and you never know with Alabama, depending on, USC loses and Alabama passes them. And if LSU loses to Georgia, I think that USC Notre Dame game is huge for the entire
Yeah. I guess we could come in, and I don't think this is the most likely situation, but I could totally see it. I think it's on the table. It comes down to if there is a situation where it's one spot for undefeated TCU or one loss Pac-12 champion USC, which way is the committee going to go? I love this TCU team. I love Max Duggan. I really do. Yeah. I think USC is good as well. It's fun rooting for TCU right now. I think the committee could go USC.
I think they would, and I think they should. I think they've
Heisman favorite, bigger brand. Like I could see it.
Yeah. Good weekend of college football, Conrad. Make sure you watch that.
And then maybe you get three Big Ten teams with Ohio State, Michigan, and USC.
Good call. Yeah, when does that happen anyway?
I think it's 2026, but it's one of those things they'll probably move.
That's
up.
What bizarre. We'll talk about that down the road. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Happens. But let's do Boston sports quickly. Celtics keep rolling. Jason Tatum, MVP. I was at the game on Wednesday, and that dude is just electric. I don't know. Even when he's banged up, he was expected to maybe miss the game. Instead, he goes out there and drops like 37 and just wills them past the other MVP front runner and Luka Doncic. I know it's early. It's tough to talk about MVP, but I bet Tatum to win MVP before the season. Yeah. So every time he plays a game, I'm like, I'm out of my mind because you got to keep rolling. But he doesn't want to not play, which could be huge for his MVP chances. And the Celtics are 14-4 and they're they're the best team in basketball, and I don't think it's real, Milwaukee maybe, but Celtics are rolling.
Right. Well, I think it's just an interesting moment to take stock of both teams here the day after Thanksgiving, the traditional matinee, right? And
Bruins play at 1 today, right?
At 1, yep. Yeah. Celtics at 8. Are they both at home actually? Is that a changeover game?
That would be fun.
I know they don't do those anymore.
Boston's at home at 8 and
yeah, they're both at home. Yeah, they're both at home. It's going to be rocking down at the Garden today.
Yeah.
Shout out
to the floor crew.
The bull gang. I think with the Celtics, we'll start with Celtics. Like if they play, I saw a stat the other day. I don't remember where at it. If they play 500 from here on out, which they won't, but if they play 500 from here on out, they're going to win 60 games. So, which now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if that math is right, but
regardless,
they're in great shape right now.
Math.
Right. They're 10 games over 500 in the NBA, 42, 43, 40. They're going to win 50. They're going to win 50 games, but they're not going to play 500 from here on out. They're going to be better than that. Yep. They feel like they're in a really good spot, and they're navigating some injuries. And the biggest concern right now with the Celtics is defense. And I'm very okay with that because they're without arguably their best defensive player. I know Marcus Smart was defensive player of the year a year ago, and I am a huge Marcus Smart guy, but he was able to do a lot of what he was able to do last year because he knew he had Robert Williams behind him, right? He was able to play very aggressively, and the two of them make each other better. I guess I shouldn't say best defense player, but the two of them make each other better. It increases the level of the overall level of the defense. So I'm not worried about that. And boy, can this team score. And, somebody said to me the other day when I'm like, when they get Robert Williams back, it's going to help the defense. I'm going to say, yeah, but they won't be the same offensively. They won't. Like, Rob's a pretty good offensive player.
Yeah,
he can contribute on that. He's gotten a lot better. He may early in his career was liability offensively. He's come a long, long way. He's lobbed Williams for a reason, right? So I think the Celtics are in a really good spot. And when it comes to the Bruins, I know, American Thanksgiving's a big checkpoint in the NHL, and they're kind of in good shape. And I think getting Swayman back is huge because they can let Ullmark rest up a little bit now. Charlie, I know they had a rough night the other night. Charlie McAvoy is playing excellent, excellent hockey, which is massive. Hampus Lindholm is looking to be, you know, potentially the guy that saves Don Sweeney's job the way he's looked coming out of that trade. He's been excellent. And, you know, Bergeron and Marchand doing what they're doing. Shout out to Patrice Bergeron, 1,000 points. So everybody's healthy. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good checkpoint at both seasons, and they're both kind of rolling at the first major checkpoint. The next one will be New Year's, and then it'll be Groundhog Day. But things look good right now.
Yeah, the thing with mentioning the goalie situation in with the Bruins is huge, because I mean, Omar, I think he's the favorite to win the Vezina right now, but like, he's only played, I think, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but he's never played close to like a full goalie.
Right, season. He's always been a backup goalie.
He's always backup, a platoon type guy, and he was getting a lot of run early here because of the Swayman injury, and he played well. Don't get me wrong; he's playing great hockey, but can he sustain that if he has to, you know, carry the load the entire time? Yeah. So getting Swayman back in that spot to be able to spell him is huge. Again, like you said, McAvoy and Lindholm on D, they're studs. The offense is actually scoring goals for the first time in what feels like years. Even with, you know, a guy like David Pastrnak, but you have secondary scoring that it's a lot more fluid of hockey. It's almost when Claude Julien was here, they kind of hit a wall. And right. So they got rid of him, and then Cassidy came in, and it was a jolt of life, but they still sort of struggled to put the puck in the net as consistently as you would like them to. Cassidy's gone, and now Montgomery's here, and it's like they have that life again. So this feels like a really good spot with some aging veterans, but some solid veterans still playing great hockey, mixed with a young crew and guys like, you know, Lindholm and McAvoy and Pastrnak. 17-3, best record in hockey.
Yeah,
it's like you said, it's early, and this is a solid checkpoint to take a look at it. But I mean,
they're kind of, and to talk about the offense, like you're saying, Ty Anderson calls it globetrotter. Like Ty Anderson for 95 Sports Hub. It's kind of the same thing, right? The Bruins and the Celtics, these traditional defensive smash mouth teams, they're just coming out and track racing everybody, and it's working. So see how long it can hold up. But, you know, the thing is, they both have the horses to do it. I'm the first one to sit here and talk about, oh, it's not sustainable. Well, Celtics arguably have the best 1-2 duo in the league in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Right.
Bruins have one of the, you know, most electric goal scorers of all time in David Pastrnak, a couple of future Hall of Famers. They got two of the best young puck moving defensemen in the game. It does feel sustainable. They're good teams with good rosters.
Right.
So that's why it's exciting. It's not like they get out to this run. Like a couple of years ago, the Celtics had a start like this, but it didn't match up to the personnel they had.
Right.
And so you were kind of just waiting for them to slow down. Eventually they did. This is what a team with this roster should look like for both the Celtics and the Bruins. Right. The Bruins do this all the time. They outplay their roster early in the season.
Right.
And then they come back down to earth in the spring.
They win a President's Cup, and then they lose in the second round.
Right.
Yeah.
Both more so the Celtics than the Bruins, I would say.
Yeah.
But both of these teams are playing up to their rosters.
Right.
So that's why it's so exciting, because this doesn't feel like a fluke.
Right.
Maybe to this extent, a little bit. Like, you know, the
17-3 hockey's
right.
Tough.
17-3. I think the Celtics are what, 14-4?
14-4.
They're not both gonna win 78 games or whatever that pace is. I'm not gonna do the math again. They're not gonna both gonna win in the 70s, but
right.
Playing this dominantly on a regular basis feels sustainable for both teams because of the roster.
To get out to this hot of a start, it allows you to pan off a little bit and still
right.
Still, you know,
or not even pan off, rest up.
And just get back to like a level of play where, I mean, you're going to lose, like you said, you're going to lose some games. You're not going to sustain it, but getting out to this hot start allows them to, like you said, rest up. And also, I mean, it shows that, you know, they can play. So see what happens. I don't even want to do the Red Sox, so I'm just changing the backer now because I can't.
No, I mean, they're going to lose. Talk about playing up to your roster. They're going to lose their best players and then play up to their roster.
I can't do Red Sox. So let's go back to Patriots. We'll quickly wrap this thing up.
Yeah.
Again, not a huge moral victory guy, but I thought that the offense showed a lot. The defense struggled. Special teams, tough, but a lot to build off of. Get right back to it with the Bills coming to town on Thursday. Me and Alex will be back here. We'll both be at Gillette on Sunday, so you can follow us on Twitter for coverage as they start prep for the Bills. Sunday's their Wednesday, so they'll be down at practice on Sunday. We'll be there for coverage. And then get back after it in the throwbacks against the Bills, a huge divisional game. So me and Alex will then preview that game early next week here on Patriots Beat. So, again, make sure you follow Alex on Twitter, at RealAlexBarth. He's got some great Patriots coverage and all Boston sports coverage there. And read his stuff on 98.5thesportsup.com. I like the pointing to the Twitter handle now.
Yeah, if I could figure it out, it would be great.
So yeah, because it's backwards. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mike Cadlick. You can see all my CLNS media coverage there, and you can read my stuff on clnsmedia.com as well. Wrote a quick takeaways column last night and also talked about Mac Jones being the guy in Foxborough. So, again, me and Alex will be back to preview Pat's Bills next week. Until then, we will see you guys. Hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving and enjoy. Go watch college football this weekend because it's awesome. Go enjoy the weekend of sports.